Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Official Charts Take the Hit, the show where we get to know big names in music a little better as they face random questions themed around the UK's best-selling singles of all time. These could be questions like, what did they want to be when they were younger? What is the highest price tag item they own, you know, like the Jessie J song? Or when did they last get lucky, like Daft Punk? This week's guest is the hugely talented Adam Lambert. Now, Adam shot to fame when he reached the final of American Idol back in 2009. He released his debut album called For Your Entertainment that same year, and so far he scored 3 top 40s on the official albums chart, most recently with The Original High, which debuted inside the top 10 in 2015. After that, his career took somewhat of a surprising turn. He joined forces with Queen, and the result has been a huge, huge success. They constantly tour together around the world. It's incredible. And as a nice nod to their work together, Adam made a brief and sort of secret cameo in the recent Bohemian Rhapsody film. Adam is currently gearing up to release his 4th album called Velvet, and it sees him take on a much more kind of 70s rock funk sound, which you can hear on lead singles New Eyes and Coming In Hot. I wanted to ask Adam about the new album, plus loads more stuff, when we met with him at his publicist's offices in London. Adam Lambert, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Good.
This glorious morning in London.
Yes, rainy.
I was looking forward, so to set the scene, we're at your publicist's offices in London.
Yeah.
I thought it's at the top of a skyscraper. I thought we'd get an amazing view.
And we're in the clouds.
We're quite literally in the clouds, not overlooking London.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Are you ready to play Take the Hit?
I'd love to play, yeah.
So
I'll take a hit. I'll take two.
Yeah.
Puff, pass.
Let's see what happens.
Okay.
So just to explain quickly, so you're clear. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions.
Okay.
And they are themed around the UK's best-selling singles of all time.
Cool.
The songs are going to be picked at random through our random number generator.
Okay.
And the number that comes up will relate to a song on the all-time chart, which will throw up a topic of discussion.
Got it.
Makes sense?
It makes sense.
Let's have a go.
Spin the wheel. Okay, I got number 22.
Okay, so.
Yes. What's number 22?
The 22nd biggest selling single of all time in the UK is Mark Ronson feat. Bruno Mars, Uptown Funk.
Ah. Wow, they made it to number 22 of all time?
Of all time.
That's
already.
That's wild. Good job, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing record.
Yeah, no, right.
It's absolutely amazing.
Undeniably good.
Yeah.
It was number one in 2014 and 2015.
Yeah.
Biggest selling single in the UK of 2015.
Wow.
Amazing.
Good job, guys.
1.68 million sales.
Wow.
My question is a bit tenuous to this, but I wanted to talk about your new music out of this, because the sound is like quite funky.
You've
done a sort of more funk-orientated route.
Yeah.
So when did you decide to kind of start pursuing the new music, and how did you arrive at this kind of sound? Because you've always been sort of influenced by... Prince and David Bowie.
Yeah, I think on all of my albums, there's been moments that are a bit funky. I like music that makes you move. I like music that has a good groove to it. But this time around, I think I'm doing it maybe slightly more organic way, in the way that we've like produced the tracks. They're very based on the instruments, on live instrumentation. I've always loved that kind of music. I love funk music. I remember when I was a kid, I was like shopping at, you know, the CD store, you know, back when you actually went and bought physical albums and whatnot, and I found like a best of type compilation of disco and funk music. And I was in high school, I'm sure, and I put it on when I got home, and I was just like, oh my God, a handful of the songs I had heard before because they were really iconic songs. But then I discovered all these other songs and these other artists, and I just loved it. I like studying things like art and history and things like that, and like kind of getting a lay of the land, like who else contributed to this, you know, what else was major. to see kind of what influences what.
But the new track, the latest track, New Eyes, where's that kind of taking cues from? I get kind of a bit of Prince in it, but also...
Yeah, there is a little bit of a Prince, but there's also, like, I think in the verse it's a bit of blues as well.
Yeah.
There's a blues kind of thing going on. And yeah, in the chorus kind of, it's a little more soul in the chorus. I don't know, you know, honestly, like, I grew up in a house where my parents played a lot of vinyl. My dad listened to a lot of classic rock and kind of prog rock and stuff, and my mom was listening to a lot of soul music, you know, Al Green and Sly Stone with the funk music. I remember that Sly Stone album she played all the time. And so I think this song and the rest of the album is influenced partially by that and partially by me sort of seeing and playing the Top 40 game over the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of getting a little bit frustrated with how everything sort of starts to sound the same, with exceptions of things like Uptown Funk. So there are these records over the past 10 years that stick out because they dared to be different.
Mm.
But so much of the industry tends to kind of follow and copy. And so I was like, okay, well, what else is there out there for me to kind of create that feels real to me, but that is a little different than what I've done in the past? And I started listening to a lot more alternative music that might not be huge, giant hits, but that's still widely regarded as great music or great bands.
So stuff people look back on and go, this is still great.
Yeah, well, and it's like it's not necessarily about one song, but it's about them as a group or as an artist, and about like the big picture and their long-term influence in music. And I love that. I think that's important. You know, bands like Tame Impala, for example, or the Black Keys, they've had their moments of songs, but it's more about like, they're known for creating this style of music. They're in their own lane, and they've influenced a lot of other artists,
yeah,
including me.
And this sound as well, it doesn't feel like you putting on a kind of strange new outfit and trying to fit into it.
Which I have the tendency of doing.
It sounds really comfortable.
It feels really comfortable. And I noticed it when I got up on stage to perform it for the first time. It was like a no-brainer. You know, where in the past I've definitely had singles where I went to go perform them, like, oh, I have to like practice this. This is actually harder than I thought, and I have to figure out how I'm going to do this live. But New Eyes just feels so. There is an effortlessness to it. It flows. It's supposed to feel comfortable. It's supposed to feel like someone's hugging you.
Is the rest of the album kind of following that path, that vibe?
I think that there's more high energy music
elsewhere
on the album. It's definitely one of the more chill tracks. And, you know, I think it's the traditional playbook for, you know, releasing a new album is you lead with the song that sort of is your biggest and boldest and craziest. And I've sort of rejected that formula on this because I think we're in 2019 and the rules are sort of out the window. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I just decided to trust my instincts and not make it about as much about the game and the hustle of singles, and just be like, you know what? I have my fans that are lovely. I hope maybe there's some new fans that start listening to this, but I wanted to kind of warm everybody up, you know? Like you're in the kitchen and you put the sauce on the stove and you just bring it to a simmer.
Yeah.
It's not at a boil yet. It's not ready to have other things brought into it yet, but it's just the first step. It's the appetizer. It's also like foreplay, and that's an even better analogy.
That's an even better one.
Yeah, you gotta start slow. And take your time.
What is one of the bangers on it? Can you give us any details on?
Yeah, there's a song coming. I can tell you now. There's a song coming in September, and it's called Superpower.
Okay.
And it is a banger.
That's a banger title. Not that you judge a song by its title.
It sounds like how it's called. Yeah, it's good.
Excellent.
Anyway, if I do say so myself, it's good.
This is a plan, though. I like it.
Yeah, it's. I'm just trying to grow the album for people.
Yeah. Shall we go again?
Yeah, let's go again. I'm talking too much.
No, you're not.
Number 99. That's a good number.
So, number 99 is Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr.
I love that.
A classic, now only heard at Halloween, really. But
yeah, right, exactly.
Good enough, right?
Yeah.
Number two in 1984.
Wow.
It was beaten to the top by another million seller, another like huge selling song. Stevie Wonder's "I Just Called to Say I Love You."
That's a good one.
I feel like it's kind of fair enough that it was kept off the top by that song.
Yeah, I mean, Stevie, you can't really get in Stevie's way.
Yeah,
he's an icon.
1.18 million sales in the UK. Not bad. So, are you afraid of ghosts?
Who are you gonna call?
What's your biggest fear? And this can either be something kind of quite grand and existential, or it can be like some weird phobia that you've got.
I don't really have any weird phobias, actually. I'm a pretty rational guy, I think, most of the time. I've definitely had like borderline paranormal moments. Like,
really?
You ever had that like that thing where you like your body wakes up, or your mind wakes up, but your body's still sleeping?
Yes.
What do they call it? Sleep paralysis.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So that's happened to me a few times, and it's really creepy.
It's really creepy.
It's like you feel like you can't move, like you're stuck, or you can't speak, and it's like feels like someone's holding you back.
Yeah.
And one time I had it. I had gone to bed, and so I was like waking up. Obviously, my body was frozen, and I swore I felt like a person walk into the, I was staying in a hotel, like walk into the bedroom and walk around to the side of the bed I was on and kind of lean over and like bend over like they were looking at me really closely. And like I swore I felt this presence of this person, or I saw a shadow or something, and it was very weird. And then I finally, like you fight, and then you can move again. And I looked it up, and actually that's really common, is this like
yeah.
when sleep paralysis is to see a dark figure in the room. So obviously like, you know, it could, the science behind it could be that, you know, people just hallucinate because of their mental state, and it's a psychological thing.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of weird that it's a common thing that they experience, that everyone's experienced this dark thing. And that, to me, that it set my imagination spinning, because I just thought, I wonder if that's like in between worlds or something.
Yeah, that weird unexplainable part of the brain almost.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you can yes, you can explain it with science, but also it feels very real. And like, I don't know, you can say that about a lot of things that are hallucinogenic. You know, the science is, oh, you're poisoning your body and you're just kind of tripping out, but like the things that you experience and realize in those states can be really like really transformative and really next level, and kind of thing, like, you know, feeling like you're getting messages from beyond or from a higher power.
Yeah.
You know.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Number 33.
So the 33rd biggest selling single of all time in the UK is Britney Spears, Baby One More Time.
Nice.
Number one in 1999 in the UK.
That's a good year.
I think it was 98 in the US. It came out
probably
later here.
Yeah, because that's how it was.
Staggered
back then.
Releases.
Yeah.
Oh, even that feels like
old days.
1.57 million sales in the UK. Going off the sort of One More Time element of the song, is there a moment in your career you'd like a do-over on? Is there a performance or something you're like, oh, I wish I could do that again, for better or worse, actually.
Well, yeah, and I
stuff.
Don't even know, like that I did an awards performance very early on in my career, right after American Idol. It was, you know, just to kick off my first single ever, and it was For Your Entertainment on the AMAs.
I remember this.
You know, I don't know if I say that I regret what happened, but it was a performance that created a lot of dust, you know, kicked up a lot of dust. And it was, you know, I think the conversation that came out of it was actually really cool, because it was sort of talking about double standards and kind of addressed homophobia head on. So it was definitely good talking points. And I think in the long run, it's an interesting story to bring with me on my journey. But I think at the time, it was maybe a little like too soon for that type of statement. I hadn't really established myself as a solo artist yet, so it sort of was like a bit of like martyrdom that I found myself in. Like, in order to make a statement, I kind of sacrificed some goodwill, you know?
Yeah.
And also, like I've said, it wasn't really premeditated, which is also the one thing I would kind of rethink is, you know, I didn't do it during rehearsal. And for those that don't know, it's like I kissed a guy on stage very forcibly. And the choreography that I had was kind of dirty. I don't know if it would even bother anybody now.
Like, exactly.
It's so funny,
I mean,
you know? It was 10 years ago, and it was also in the US.
But is that because of that performance that it's now not shocking? As in, now... Like,
I don't think I single-handedly
I'm
changed
not saying,
anything. But I think that it was a product of the
combination
time.
Of things.
Right? Yeah, but at the time, it was still... If you look at now, if you look at 10 years later, especially in the US, like, we finally have a large number of queer artists that are, and some of which are breaking through the mainstream.
Yeah. I think it's still a real challenge.
It still is a challenge, but it's definitely like happening.
It's happening.
It's been proven it works. It can work. It, you know, maybe some of these artists would be bigger if they were straight.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's not a fair thing to say, because what makes them great artists and is who they are, is that that's what they are, that's their identity, that's part of what they are as an artist, is that they're bringing that narrative to the masses. So, you know, the what ifs are kind of, it's kind of silly to do the what ifs, you know?
Yeah.
And with the performance, it's silly to do the what ifs. I don't know, some people say, like, you know, would your career have gone differently had you not done that? And I don't know if it was that, it lasted that long. I think it just kind of created a little bit of a fear in people, perhaps.
Yeah.
It kind of freaked people out.
I do think the reaction is different here to it was in America. It's a bigger population of people to get outraged over.
Yeah. I think one thing that I can say in hindsight that I realize now, because it's been 10 years and I'm 10 years older, is that maybe I was trying a little hard. Maybe. And maybe that was a bit off-putting for an audience, whether or not they were homophobic or whatever. You know, an audience member might have thought, that's a bit much for me.
Right.
And I think that's the beauty of growing older and having experience. And I know personally for me right now, like, I know myself as an artist better than I did then. I know exactly what I am and what I'm not. And yeah, I don't know if I would do it again if I knew better. If I could go back, I don't know what I would do. I certainly would sing it better, because it was actually a really messy performance, to be honest with you.
Just vocally.
And that's sort of where it came from. Is like I was up there, and like we had some sound problems, and there was track and band playing, and the track wasn't on, and that threw me off, and there was a lot of staging, and then I tripped midway through the performance, and I tripped and I rolled forward, and thank God I recovered, but that freaked me out. And so it was just a disaster.
Well, live and learn.
Live and learn. But it was one for the books, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm glad it happened, because I think it made me who I am now.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily, like, it didn't cut my head off in the business. You know, right afterwards, we had a big hit with What Do You Want From Me?
Yeah.
Which, you know, worked out really well. So,
exactly.
Thank God.
Great song. Should we go again?
Yeah, spin it. Number two.
So the second biggest selling single of all time in the UK is Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Wow. Oh, it's the second.
Second biggest.
For some reason I thought it was the first.
Yeah.
I think it was for a while. Maybe they recently got kicked off.
It was for a while, yeah. So good, it was number one twice in the UK.
Wow.
In 1975 and again in 91. And it sold 3.82 million copies.
Wow.
A lot.
Yeah, that's
a lot. For the UK.
Yeah.
I'm really glad this came up.
Yeah.
Because I get to ask you about
it. I know these guys, yeah.
Yeah, you know these guys. Well, I had to just ask firstly, like, what was it like being in Bohemian Rhapsody, the film?
I mean, I was in it for a minute. If you blink, you'll miss me. Obviously, I had a tiny cameo, but... It was fun. It was
a small but memorable part.
Yeah, and it was cool. I got to meet Rami. He's lovely.
And I love that it was kind of undercover.
Yeah, and that was kind of the fun of it, is that we were like, let's not make a big fuss out of it. It was more just kind of a thing to do for fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was in the UK actually at the time anyway, so I was here. And then they just say, oh, do you want to play this little bit part? And I said, yeah, sure. And it was very cold.
Was it?
It was freezing.
Oh, it didn't look.
It was freezing.
Oh.
And we were out like in the country, you know, near like on an airfield, I think.
Oh,
it was out in, like,
glamorous.
They were just using like that open space. And yeah, it was really fun. And I'm the trucker that you know, kind of cruises Freddie at the rest stop. And then it's interesting because the rest is to be, you know, imagined by the audience. And I think different people think different things out of that scene. Some people don't realize that what may have transpired is...
Yes, I agree.
Some sex in a toilet.
Yeah.
But, and also, who's to say that that actually did happen? Maybe that's not what happens. Maybe Freddie just looks at him and has a realization.
Exactly.
Which is more what actually happens.
Yeah, because so. I also like that moment is in the film, because a lot of people say, you know, the film is a very kind of Hollywood storytelling of his life or something, but I like that those moments are kind of dripped in there.
I think it's a clever movie in terms of the fact that depending on who you are as an audience member, you're going to get something different out of it. Like each person gets pulls different things from the story, you know, and it's clever that way.
Yeah. And you've been touring with Queen since, is it 2011? Am I getting this right?
I think so, yeah.
That is about that. Quite a while now.
Yeah. I mean, we did the... Yeah, that's probably about that. Either that or maybe it's 2012. I don't know. But we did the EMAs, the MTV EMAs together. That was kind of our first performance publicly. And then after that, there was some time that passed. And then we did this thing in the Ukraine for like 250,000 people for like it was an AIDS charity concert with Elton John. And that was my first proper two-hour set. And I had 9 days of rehearsal to prepare for it.
Eek.
Not enough.
No.
Not enough. Well, it was trial by fire.
Yeah, but the reaction was incredible. So.
Yeah, it was good. And I was terrified. I was so nervous. And, you know, nervous for so many different reasons. Nervous because, like, okay, am I going to remember all the words? Nervous because I thought, what are the fans going to think?
Yeah, the expectation on that.
Huge. Nervous because I wanted to make sure Brian and Roger were happy.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot riding on it.
And it must be nice to see... in that space of time, because back then Queen, the whole Queen kind of thing was in a different place, and now with the film it feels like that music have really properly has ingrained itself into another generation of people.
Yeah,
which must be so nice
to
see.
It's so exciting, and I think that's probably the biggest takeaway of the film is that it's like injected new life into the Queen brand, which was not suffering, by the way.
No.
I mean we've been selling out all of our tours for the past couple of years.
The corners of the planet, see you guys reach.
And that's the mind-blowing part of it, is that it was already great, you know, and you know, there's songs and adverts everywhere. There were, you know, Queen is ever-present in pop culture, so for the movie to kind of, like, top that is a real feat.
Yeah, it just feels great for their legacy, just to have it another injection into it.
And I think
kind of
that
classics.
Was the aim of the movie.
Yeah.
Was to cement their legendary status as mythic rock stars, as a group. I think the film does that very well.
Your new music, is it separate from Queen, but has any studio time ever happened with all of you together? Have they helped out on this album? Or have you just taken lessons from the gigs?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot by osmosis that just rubs off. But Brian played on my last album, actually, on a track called Lucy, which we actually have played a few times together. And they've played What Do You Want From Me before with me, and we did Ghost Town and Rock and Rio. So they've played my songs a couple times, which to me is like such an honor. It's such a mind fuck. I'm like, what? But it's funny. We keep getting asked about recording together, and it just really hasn't. The only people that keep bringing it up are the press.
They want it.
Everybody asks, and I don't know. I think it's like one of those never say never things. Like, who knows? You know, maybe the right opportunity for the right reason will come up, but it hasn't come up yet. And also at that point, like, is it Queen at that point?
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, you already do work together, so
yeah. And essentially, it's Queen plus Adam Lambert. That's how it's built.
Yeah.
Because I'm stepping in and singing their songs.
Yeah.
It's their catalog. So if we were to put something new out together that's original, would it be called Queen?
Yeah. Is that too
to
far?
Me, Queen is Freddie and John too, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. But it's cool that you work together. It's amazing you get to work with them.
It is like the biggest blessing of my career. It has led to so much and so much joy and so much further opportunities and getting to perform in front of audiences around the world that are elated that we're there, and I've learned a lot. I mean, I could go on and on about it. It's been, I know I will look back, you know, in old age and realize that this has been probably the biggest part of my and most transformative part of my career. It's such an honor.
Shall we spin again?
Yeah. Number 173.
Right, it's the 173rd. We're getting down the list
a bit.
Wow, yeah. Best selling single of all time in the UK is CeeLo Green, Forget You.
I love that song.
Want to give it its real name.
Yeah.
Fuck You.
Yeah.
Number one in 2011, 1.01 million sales.
Great song.
It's a simple question. When was the last time you told someone, fuck you?
I think the last time I said it was more like a joke, like I was like, you know, taking the piss, like, oh, fuck you. It was probably my publicist.
Who just came in, by the way.
Yeah, but it was like in fun, we were just messing with each other because we're comfy. But like,
are you quite a mild tempered person? Do you get quite fiery? Do you have to if there's people?
I get frustrated with things and like heated, but I don't lose my cool. Like I it takes a lot for me to like get to fly off the handle. I think I'm pretty measured. I'll get like angsty and have to like talk it out, you know?
Do you store things up and then let it all out, or do you just
I'm that person. I actually don't know where my filter went. I say exactly what I'm thinking in the moment most of the time.
Good.
And sometimes it gets me in trouble.
Oh, no, it's good. I think that outweighs.
In some ways, yeah. In some ways not. Number 17.
So the 17th biggest selling single in the UK of all time is Believe by Cher.
Ah, good one.
Number one, it was number one for a long time in the UK. I think it was 7 weeks.
It's a big hit in the US too, I think.
Yeah. In 1998.
And I actually recently got to sing this song for her at the Kennedy Center Honors. And I got nervous because it was a big... First of all, the Kennedy Center Honors are very like, you know... upscale
event.
Like Washington DC people, a lot of like politicians, and so it's kind of a very refined kind of highbrow event.
It's
and
literally legends only.
Yeah,
kind of
it's so I was like, I felt that pressure, and I knew it was televised, and I remember when this album came out. I was a junior in high school, and I remember buying this album and listening to it in my first car on my CD player over and over again, and going for drives on the freeway with the Cher album on, and singing along to this. So it's interesting that it had that full circle thing for me, you know? And I actually sang the song also on American Idol during Hollywood Week. So it wasn't one of my big songs that I did like during the live shows, but I did it to kind of get to the next round early on. So it's been like coming back for me.
So for that, to see her reaction of the performance after, you know, listening to it in your car and stuff, must have just been ridiculous.
Well, I couldn't quite see that she got teary because she was sort of, you know, I didn't have a camera. You know, it was like I could see her, but there was lights and I was focused, and then, you know, I definitely, like, at the end of the song, I made eye contact and blew her a kiss, but I didn't realize that she had gotten so emotional. So when I saw the footage, I was like, wow, that's a special moment. I'll remember that.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Adam, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For your time.
Yeah.
Thanks for playing Take the Hit.
Good game. I like this game. We should keep playing it sometime.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adam, for such a great chat. I really, really enjoyed that. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, then please rate and review us, as it really helps others to find the show. And next week, we talk to 90s pop icon. Yes, I'm going there. It's Louise.
I knew people would have either love it or go, I think she should be wearing more clothes, or, you know, shouldn't be so sexy, she's mum, all these things. But actually, I just thought, I'm going to own this and run with it, because I know where my sort of boundaries and lines are, and I think it looks sporty and cool, and I love the track. I think it's a great song, and I'm super proud of sort of how well it was received.
Get that episode as soon as it's released by subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Acast. And in the meantime, you can check out the latest singles and albums charts, plus the all-time bestsellers lists mentioned in this show, and loads more over at officialcharts.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.